people, welcome to Have Guitar Will Travel, presented by Vintage Guitar Magazine, with your host, me, James Patrick Regan, otherwise known as Jimmy from the Deadlies. And today I'm speaking with bassist and band leader Danielle Nicole. In our conversation, Danielle tells us a little bit about her family, her older brother being left-handed just like she is, and she tells us about the difficulties of finding gear early on as a lefty bass player, and her ability to flip a right-handed instrument over and play it. Danielle takes us through her musical education and her choice of bass due to her brother's playing drums and guitar, and she tells us about her singing, learning from her mother and her grandmother. Danielle talks about her early influences, the blues and musicals, and fabulous women singers. And Danielle describes living and growing up in Kansas City and the blues scene there, with her father taking her to clubs early on and starting her band, Trampled Underfoot, with her brothers. Danielle takes us through the stress of singing the national anthem for the Kansas City Royals, and Danielle tells us about her band and takes us through her gear. Danielle describes her album that she's working on now, recording it in Kansas City and California, and touring plans for her band for the near future. To find out more about Danielle, you can go to her website, DanielleNicoleMusic.com. That's DanielleNicoleMusic.com. Please subscribe, like, comment, share, and most of all, review this podcast. I'd really appreciate it. And please support Vintage Guitar Magazine and all the wonderful things they do for us guitar players, because guess what? They do so many wonderful things for us guitar players. Here's my friend Danielle. Oh, hey there, Danielle. How are you?
I'm doing really well. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Is everybody in your family left-handed?
No, just my older brother and I.
Okay.
My oldest brother, yeah.
And what about your dad?
No, my dad wasn't, but his mom was.
Okay.
So my grandmother. So I guess, yeah.
And when you started on bass, where did you start, right-handed or left-handed?
No, I started on a... I started the proper way.
Uh-huh.
I started true lefty with the low E towards my chin.
Yeah. Of course. And that's still how you play, right? Like, you know.
Yeah, that's how I play, you know, just at my shows. But there have been so many situations where, like, you know, I don't want to bring a bass to a jam and stuff. And so, but I've been able to, I can play upside down
sure.
on, you know, pretty within reason.
Yeah. Yeah. That's crazy. That's quite a skill to learn.
Yeah, you know, and it was just out of necessity. But my older brother Nick, he can fluently play upside down as well.
Oh wow. That,
yeah.
Man, that's tough.
Yeah.
as a lazy right-handed person, it blows me away. What was your first instrument? Was it bass?
No, I kind of was messing around on guitar, a little bit of six strings, some chords, you know.
Uh-huh.
But I took tenor saxophone in middle school for a little while.
Okay.
As well.
Yeah.
So I took a little bit of very little traditional schooling. But no, it was like, you know, I can mess around, you know, I know a little bit on a lot of different things,
yeah.
But, I like writing on guitar and stuff. And I, like I said, I knew some chords and I knew some transitions and stuff like that, but I did not really know any instruments through and through when I started learning bass, you know, and it was kind of a necessity because Nick already played guitar, Chris already played drums. And so I was like, well, I'll check it out, you know, and it was a rough first couple of years. But you know, I didn't give up. I just kept at it. And it's still really challenging and I love it though.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. A lot's been made of your bass playing, which is superb. Your voice is amazing. Yeah. Your voice is incredible. Were you singing right out of the gate?
Yeah. My mom's a singer. Her mom was a singer. You know, it's just like, I just grew up, and thankfully my mom had a really good taste in music. Both my parents did. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, she was listening to Patti LaBelle and, you know, all
yeah.
this stuff growing up. And, you know, I got the rock and roll side and stuff, but, no, I've been singing as long as I can remember.
Okay. Well, it shows.
Yeah.
And so when you were starting on bass, what was your bass? What was your first bass?
It was my brother Chris actually had just this cheap right-handed red Ibanez that was like shaped like a P bass, and there was a sticker of Boba Fett on it, and he let me string it left-handed, and that was what we started. That's what I started playing bass on. Like with our first show that we did as a band, you can see like I'm just right in front of this big Fender Bassman stack, and and with my Ibanez with a Boba Fett sticker. So I played on that for a real long time, a couple of years. But then I got a proper left-handed, my white left-handed jazz bass that I've had since I got that for my 21st birthday.
Yeah.
And I've taken that everywhere. She's a beast.
Yeah. When you were growing up, like, were you drawn to, I mean, your parents were playing, you know, rock and blues, but were you drawn to anything else, you know, your own music?
Oh my gosh, yeah. Dude, I loved, I took dance for a long time, and I went to a high school we had magnet schools in Kansas City at the time. And I went to like an arts high school, and I majored in dance. And so, but they would like had a wonderful theater department and stuff. And so I really loved musicals. Uh-huh. And so, man, like Funny Girl, like Barbra Streisand, like, you know, I had the most insanely, like different, I listened to absolutely everything. But then I was also growing up with Mariah Carey and Whitney Houston and like singers, you know. Yeah, so yeah. I loved Janis Joplin as well. You know, I gravitated to a lot of female, you know, just the ones I could relate to, especially. But yeah, man, I really loved musicals and like show tunes and that whole spectrum of it was, I mean, yeah, it was my jam too.
Of course. And who were your bass people?
My bass people, Willie Dixon.
Oh wow.
Was primarily that was the guy that really, I mean, I listened to the Muddy Waters Hard Again album over and over and over again and just learning. You know, what I loved about his bass lines is they were really melodic and really thoughtful, but they were so simple and they just fit perfectly, but they still told part of the story.
Yeah, of course.
You know, and, you know, Kansas City's music scene was really, really rich at the time for traditional blues. And there was a lot of cats coming down from Chicago, and my dad would take us to the old Grand Emporium, and that's long gone. But, you know, you'd learn that box shuffle from the cats that came down from Chicago. And you learn that, you know, they'd come up from Texas just touring, you know, it was a huge spot to play. So you got that Texas blues and you could do the T-bone and, you know, and so there was just such a rich music scene in Kansas City as well. And there were a lot of musicians that I just watched all the time. Michael Dinwiddie, you know, is a local hero, and he passed away recently. But Paul Greenlease, you know, there's a ton of just local musicians that I just, you know, just listen to and, sure, and learn from.
Yeah, that's excellent.
But Willie Dixon was like my main, you know, James Jamerson.
Yeah.
The hook, you know. And so, you know, I didn't really discover Carole Kaye until I was, you know, later on in life and realizing that I've been listening to her the whole time. You know, like she's her collection is so absolutely huge.
Oh yeah.
That I didn't even realize that I was just in love with her the whole time too. So I had to give a shout out to Carol.
Oh yeah, of course. What was Kansas City like? Like, was there music everywhere in Kansas City when you were growing up?
Oh, yeah. No, Kansas, growing up, yeah. So I was born in the 80s. I'm an 80s baby.
Okay.
And so, like, 80s, 90s, and even the early 2000s was really, really banging. And we still have a great music scene here in Kansas City. It's just not as rich in the blues. And I don't want my local people to hate me for saying that, but it's not. It's just, it ebbs and it flows as with every genre does, you know, and sure. I really feel like that was just really heavy for the blues scene there. And it's not because of lack of talent or lack of anything. It's just, you know, jazz is really making a huge comeback. We've got a lot of underground music, and we've got a really, really rich rich and great blues scene as well. But I mean, it was just really, really banging back then when I was, sure. when I was growing up and my parents were taking me to BB's and stuff. And so that was like, you were torn through, you know, you, if you're going east and west, you'd hit Kansas City and St. Louis. And if you're going north and south, you know, they'd hit Kansas City and they'd split off in either St. Louis and then they meet back up in Chicago or down in Memphis, you know? So it was, you could just do full circles. And so it was just, it was really, really amazing.
Yeah. Were you, so it was your band always with your brothers, like early on, was your band always with your brothers or did you have bands like in high school with friends?
I didn't really play with friends in high school. They're the bands they were in. They were like in like, you know, jazz band and, and really not, I was really, I play with a lot of older musicians, you know, and I sang in a few, you know, blues and top blues, like rock cover bands and stuff kicking off. Cause I, you know, I was a teenager. What did I have to write about, you know, like, I mean, honestly, like, I started writing songs and stuff, but I didn't have 4 hours worth of original material kicking off, you know, like, come on. So, you know, I was doing that before, just a few years before Trampled Underfoot had gone. And then we just played together for so long. We were hitting 200 to 230 shows a year.
Wow.
For many years in a row, because, you know, we were teetering between the one set shows and the 4 hour gigs, you know? So it was like some markets we were still doing the real long shows and we had to, you know, we weren't sleeping on couches, but we weren't sleeping in Marriott's either.
Yeah.
So, you know, we were playing everywhere.
Yeah. Sure. And those 4 hour shows, was that all originals or was that like a mix of covers and originals or covers?
When Nick and Chris and I started out, it was about half and half.
Mm-hmm.
And as we went on and we started writing a lot more original material, like our shows, you know, we were getting down to just two sets on some shows and then just headliner sets and stuff like that. So we were just doing maybe two covers out of 14 songs, you know, so we definitely, once we started getting into it, it was, we were like, okay, we need to write some music. We got to figure out what. Not figure out, but you know, we just got to do the work and write songs because we've got stories to tell now.
Sure.
We're old enough to tell them musically. Yeah.
And the venues you guys were playing, what was it like? I mean, you told me that, you know, it was either a 1 hour set or a 4 hour set or somewhere in between. But like, was it like, were you playing breweries? Were you playing, was it clubs? What was it like?
Oh man, it was everything. Sometimes, you know, we'd go from, a huge festival to playing a listening room the next night to playing a small theater to playing a standing room venue. You know, we were able to just get in, you know, get into a lot of places. So we'd do 1,000 cap rooms and we'd do 200 cap rooms. And that was really, I think that's what really helped me from burning out. And that's what I still try to do now as well, is not just have the exact same type of venue and same room, same capacity, same environment, because man, you just get into that routine and I'm like, dude, we play music for a living, this can't be monotonous. Like, you know what I mean? And I think it's really important to keep the venues different, you know, especially knowing your market and not like, you know, it's just you. Elton John said something really big about not going to too big of venues too soon. And as much as you want to make that step and make up there, it's like, man, there's an expense increase too.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, you got to make sure you can make that step and not, you know, not get burnt out or not get just go in the red too much to where you just can't do it anymore.
How do you prepare for singing the national anthem at the baseball?
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, normally I don't have to think about that, James, to be honest. I don't have to think about that. You know, I'm just going to, I drink a lot of water and I get a lot of rest. Yeah. And I know it sounds simple because it is. you know, this weekend, I'm not going to stay up late. You know, I'm going to get up good and early because I usually don't have to sing at noon. So I'm going to make sure that I get up early and just, you know, not have too much coffee and just keep my normal stuff.
Yeah. Your mom was a singer. Did you take formal vocal lessons?
No, I took side stage vocal lessons. I did see a local vocal instructor when Trampled Underfoot had broken up, because like my brother and I had shared vocals, so I didn't sing the whole night.
Okay.
And so I did go to an instructor. I had 4 sessions with her to learn just some good warm-up techniques and stuff to get my stamina back up to singing, you know, 90 full minutes again.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, we don't have a lot of songs where it's just like not vocally demanding. And so I had to just get to a point where I learned my schedule, like, or learned the set list, schedule that in a proper way. But I did, you know, she did teach me some real good vocal instructions and some good warm-ups and different techniques that you should do. And she did teach me a few things. I'm all street knowledge, you know, and so it was, for her to teach me some warm-ups was good.
And what about bass? Did you take formal bass lessons or no, not so much?
I did take some formal lessons. I was in a band called Fresh Brew at the time, and there was a bass player, his name was Les Moore, and he came over and gave me quite a few lessons and some really, really great advice about learning the neck and learning different placements so you can think about different phrasings and different ways of saying things. And there was another bass player that I'd worked with for a long time. His name is Stephen Hicks. And he really taught me a lot about what is staying in the pocket and being simple and meaningful at the same time.
Sure.
You
sure.
know?
Yeah, of course.
And then there was DC Bellamy. So he taught me 100% about what you do, what your role is, and what not to do as a bass player as well. So I got some really, really valuable advice from some really great local musicians.
Excellent. And so when you're touring now, what's your band look like?
We are a trio.
Okay.
It is still a trio. It is myself. Yep, still a trio. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, we breathe, the music really, really breathes very well. You know, we have a lot of respect for each other, and so we just have a really great time, and we're able to fill the music, but it's still spacey enough to breathe. I mean, I got Brandon Miller on guitar, so uh-huh. I'm pretty set as far as needing, you know, to fill it and be respectful and tasteful and meaningful that yeah. way.
Of course. And who's playing drums?
Well, we rotate between 2 drummers right now, and it's usually either Pat Adams or Kelsey Cook. They're both here from Kansas City.
Okay.
And over the last year, man, we've really kind of figured out what works best for us, and it's really, we've fell into a really good groove, and both of these drummers are just really amazing. So, you know, we get to have fresh perspectives on the songs, but we're not like relearning it every night. It's still a really great, tight, professional show.
Sure.
It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun having different drummers. You know, it used to be a freaking nightmare, you know, and because it's, you know, especially when you're just a 3-piece, man, and you're doing original music, like it's important. And with anything that you want to do well. But yeah, we're in a good spot. It's really great.
Cool. Excellent. And do you have multiple drummers only because they're in other bands?
Yeah, you know, and it's really hard to be like, hey, can I have your full commitment for 40% of the year? You know, because I mean, if something comes up last minute, and you know what I mean, it's really easy for me to go all in and give it all.
Oh yeah, of course.
And it's easy for Brandon to do it as well. It's just I don't really feel that it's easy to ask somebody else to do that. And if you can get into a position where you have people that you can trust, and you know, it's all about what works. And we're just in a time now where I would love to, you know, be able to do what is, you know, do what it takes to be able to tell somebody, hey, you know, give me all of your time. But, you know, it's just not realistic. And like I said, it's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And so are the most of your dates fly dates, or are you guys getting in a van or a bus?
No. Okay, so it's funny. The rest of the year is actually fly days, and I despise flying. I really do. But no, we've got an E450 shuttle bus. It's a 22-passenger shuttle bus
Wow.
that, it's got a wall and all of our gears in the back. We mapped out. Brandon took the square footage of the trailer that we had at the time, and we mapped it out in the back. And we've got so all the gear. And then we got a wall. We've got built two bunks and a couch, and he built that. And yeah, so we just we're good. We got a rolling green room, which is always really nice.
Oh,
You
yeah,
know,
of
we still
course.
sleep in hotels and stuff. You know, we're not it's not it, it's not all in on that scale, which is great because it keeps my expenses lower on maintenance and traveling. You know, when we're three piece with a tour manager, it's still only four people. You know, it's like how much room do you really need for four people?
And are you selling merch yourself after the show, or does your tour manager sell merch during the show?
We usually arrange somebody at the venue,
Oh,
but if
okay.
not, we'll do it. We always come out and do meet and greet.
Oh, yeah, of course.
You
Of
know,
course.
yeah. So, but yeah, no, we try to hire somebody local because then that's another person when you're like, hey, can you just dedicate this huge chunk of time? You know, and it's like, you know, those expenses really, really add up, and you have to be logical about what you can do. And, you know, I figure if we're going out there anyway, you know, when we do the larger scale shows, obviously you need somebody else to sell the merch. But, and we're really cool because it works out because the venue, usually you can hire somebody local.
Oh, yeah, of course. What are you taking with you when you're touring as far as gear?
Is gear. Ooh, well, I have, okay, well, I've got three rigs that I bring. I pair two of them together when I'm playing electric bass, and then because we have an acoustic portion of the show as well, and I have
Oh,
an
wow.
acoustic Dean, and I just have just a little Mark bass, little head and speaker for that, just a little 210 and a Mark, a little Mark III. But when we're doing the full on electric show, I pair a 19, it's like a mid 1960s Bassman 212, and I pair that with a 410 Mark bass. And I got the 800 watt. It's just so I just do the 410s and then the 212s, and I pair them together. So I get that kind of vintage MIDI thwompy, and then the Mark bass gives me the clarity and the boom boom. And man, it's really cool. So
Oh, excellent.
that's what I'm doing. And you know, I don't really do any kind of overdrive. I've got a delay pedal that I use when I'm feeling a little spacey, but other than that, man, it's just the amps and the fingers, you
What
know.
is the delay pedal that you're using?
It's a Boss. Yeah, just a regular Boss delay.
Right on. Cool. And what about basses?
My basses, I've got my 2003 white jazz bass. I just picked up a 68 jazz bass that I'm really excited about. It's really heavy. And then I've got the American Vintage 2, the newer one. I got that a few years ago. That's my I got that Midnight Burst. And so those are my three primary electrics now.
Do you have a
But
deal with Fender?
I've
Oh,
got a
sorry.
Jack Cassidy. Sorry, I've got a
I saw
Jack
that.
Cassidy Epiphone. And man, I love playing that one, especially like festivals, because it gives it room to just, you know, breathe. But it's kind of a pain in the butt to carry with us. It's got a separate case.
Oh, no. But do you have a deal with Fender at all?
No.
No, but you're using a lot of their gear.
You know anybody? I know I am using all their gear.
No, I don't
Funny
know
you
anybody.
mentioned that. I noticed that myself.
What about, do you have deals with strings and you know, picks or anything like that?
No, I don't, but we've got a we actually Seymour Duncan just gave me new pickups
Oh,
for
right
both
on.
of my newer jazz basses, and I got the Heavy Weather ones, and it's like, because it's a split pickup because I got the jazz bass, but man, I love them. I love them. And so yeah, so shout out to Seymour Duncan
Yeah, of course, Seymour's the
because he
best.
takes really good care of me
Yeah, Seymour and MJ.
and Brandon as well.
Oh yeah. So you mentioned the Jack Cassidy. Do you have other stuff at home? Like, you know, other basses at home that you're?
Yeah, I've got another Dean acoustic at home. Okay. I've got an older jazz that I found. It's like a jazz body with a. I've been trying to find like vintage left-handed stuff, like just older, as much older stuff as I can find. Uh-huh. And there's really not a lot out there.
Yeah.
That's you know reasonable
sure.
for my kind of person to buy.
Yeah.
but so I've been on a hunt. You know, I've got all of my older basses. You know, I've got there was a local Kansas City legend. His name was Spoon, John Wilson, and he bought me a bass when I was cutting my teeth down at Club Paradox when I was just first learning. And I was playing behind DC Bellamy. So I've got a few basses that they don't ever travel or see the light of day. Sure. But really, I mean, I don't have a huge collection.
Uh-huh. That's fine.
You know, I've got my meat and potatoes, and what is odd is that I have like 5 acoustic guitars.
Oh, really?
And it's weird. I've got like a Martin, I've got a Fox, I've got some that I've kind of just bought on the road to have like a guitar to play,
sure.
you know,
yeah,
just
yeah,
to write and stuff. But it's weird. It's like I've got a really awesome semi-hollow body Gretsch guitar. Oh. And it's just crazy. I think I have more guitars than I do basses. I might. I don't know. I'll have to bust them out and do a collection. Because I've got my Delaney bass as well. And I've also got a Delaney LaGrange guitar.
Okay.
And then I've also got a Delaney wedge. Dude, you got me. I don't know if you're learning guitars here. I start listing them. I was like, oh man, I've got way more than I thought I did.
What about amps at home? Do you have like a group of amps that you don't take on the road?
I do not have I can honestly say I do not have a huge collection of amps. I've got my first stuff that I used to tour with, which is like a 115 Eminence that I used to pair with a 410 GK head.
Uh-huh.
And it was like, I mean, that GK was like, they were like, we're just going to make it as heavy as we possibly can for a 410. Like, it was insane. But really, I think that's it, you know, other than what I tour with. I haven't, you know, I don't really have a bunch of amps now.
Okay. That's fair. And when you do the fly dates,
I was like, woo, thankfully.
When you do these fly dates, what are you going to ask for as far as amps and stuff?
When I do the fly dates, I usually just ask for two Mark bass with 2 410s.
Okay. All right.
I really like a 610, but it's hard to just request a 410 and a 210. It's so real. It's just really specific and stuff. Yeah. But I just go for the, cause then I can just get everything that I need.
Yeah.
You know, cause I've tried to request the Fender bassmans before, and I'll get like the harp amp. Uh-huh. Or I'll get, you know, it's okay, but it's not the 212s.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I gotcha.
So I just give me 8 Mark bass speakers.
Your most recent record, is that, when did that come out?
That just came out last year.
Okay. All right.
Are you? Yeah. The Love and Bleed.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Are you working on a new record now?
Yeah, we are. We're going to be recording it this fall.
Okay, cool.
And I don't want to get too specific, because every time I say something, it gets pushed back and stuff doesn't happen. But yes, we are working on a new release.
Okay.
On a new record.
Excellent. And do you use the same people that you use on in your touring band to record it?
You know, I did with this last record, and it was the first time that I did it. It was like we had recorded it to tape in Kansas City in this really amazing studio, and I had local guys do it, and my producer Tony Bronigal, that I've worked with quite a few times with Trampled Underfoot and then with the Cry No More album as well. Mm-hmm. He came in from LA to do the record. We had a really great time doing it. But I'm not, I think this next one, we're going to record some here in Kansas City. And then I think we're going to go out to California to record some of it as well.
Excellent.
But we're going to use the same core for tracking on drums, bass, and guitar. Uh-huh. And then obviously Brandon will finish all the guitar work that needs to be done. But we've got plans for some friends and some collabs. Okay, and cool. it's really cool.
Yeah, that's great. That's fantastic. And you're going to be on the Legendary Rhythm and Blues Cruise all the way in 2026.
Yes, yes.
We're going to be
this October, and then we'll be next January as
right
well.
On.
Yeah. No, we're very blessed in that, you know, we get asked to be back. You know, the cruisers, they fill out those forms, and so it's them that are requesting us back. So I mean, it's that much more special that, you know, that it's them that want to have us. So we're like, that's really, you know, so I try to keep every show different. I don't repeat songs mm-hmm. on my three sets. And I try to play with as many people as I can, just because it's not expected and it's not required. So I just want to do it more,
yeah,
I guess.
More.
I don't know if that makes sense.
Oh yeah, it does. It does. And how much time do you spend in Europe playing?
You know, it varies. Usually, we try to do at least two runs a year. Mm-hmm. Last year we did a July run and then a fall run. And then this year we didn't end up doing the fall run, just for personal reasons. We just didn't go over this fall, but we uh-huh. did a huge July run in Spain.
Wow.
So next year is going to be the same. We'll go over in the summer, and then we'll do an autumn run as well. And any little sprinkles, you know, in between.
Sure.
You know, we usually get a couple of festivals either in the spring or late summer, but yeah, so July I think we'll be over in Spain, and then in the autumn we'll do like a proper European run.
Excellent. Are like financially, are you set? Like I mean, assuming you keep working.
Define set. Now, this is my only job.
Yeah, there you go.
You know,
that's it.
This is my only source of income, you know, which is both gratifying and terrifying at the same time. you know, there's always other irons in the fire. But yeah, I mean, there's always room for growth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I'm grateful for where we're at the
sure,
same time.
Of course.
I know there's a lot of people out there that don't get to do this and only this.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that means a lot to me to be able to do that, you know.
Do you teach lessons at all?
I have. I don't. You know, when I'm home, I've got, you know, we've got two kids.
Okay.
And, you know, they're in school. They're 14 and 10.
Oh,
and
wow.
They're like, they're heavy into sports, and they're like, they're people, and I'm not saying they're not important when they're little. They're a little bit more malleable as far as time goes when
they're smaller.
Yeah. And you can just be like, oh, just come with me, okay. You know, and then tour less during the school year. And you can just be like, oh, just, you know, but it's a little different when you've got, you know, baseball and you've got martial arts and you've got other people depending on the kids, you know, so. You know, when we're home, we work so hard out on the road so that I can be dedicated mom when home.
Of course.
And show my sons that as a woman, you can follow your dreams, be a good mother, and have a great career in art.
Yeah.
You know, so it is exhausting. I'm not going to lie. it is absolutely exhausting. And, you know, there's lots of lights and makeup, but no, but it's so cool though, because, you know, I get to play music for a living and I get to go in the pickup line and I get to be there at the baseball games and I want to do all that.
Oh yeah,
so,
of course.
You know, but so the long answer, not too much. I would like to do, there is a young lady that's coming in this fall and for a writing session for a couple of days. There's a young artist whose mom had reached out to me, and I thought that was really cool. And I'm always up for that kind of thing, but I'm just not dependable enough to be like, sure, I'll take on your child and teach them, because I have too much going on, you know, and I have to responsibly decline. But I'll do writing sessions and like creative bursts and stuff that's not like, I can't commit to what anybody would need to learn something, you know?
Yeah, I understand.
I think I'll be creative with you, but no, I can't teach you like how to play bass. I'm sorry.
and if you have any time outside of, you know, being a touring musician and being a mom, what do you do? What do you do for fun?
You know, I love, you know, I go camping.
Oh, right on.
We're in Missouri, so Western Missouri. So there's, you know, there's rivers everywhere. And we go on little float trips in and out. Just, you know, go pitch a tent, float the next day and come home the next day. So, you know, it's just little bursts. I absolutely adore nature.
Right on. Right on.
And I adore just... You know, I've always got tunes humming in my head, and thankfully there's a good notes app that you can always, you know, so you can always be creative and find time to do that. Because uh-huh. You got to sneak it in anymore, especially as a grown woman with kids, trying to dedicate time to writing and being creative and finding those outlets. And I feel like being in nature really helps a lot with that.
Oh, yeah, just kind of being fun. When you go to places like Colorado and stuff, do you get a chance to be in nature there?
Oh yeah. Yeah, we do. Fortunately some, you know, and that's one of the really cool things about driving everywhere is that I get to see it all.
Yeah.
You know, and I do some of the driving, but then the other times I'm just like, you just get to see it. Yeah. And whether you're, you know, we got to just like chill on the salt flats for like an hour up in Utah and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And otherwise, like, I wouldn't be able to make a trip to the Salt Flats.
Yeah.
Like, how, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, let me fly to Salt Lake City and drive out to the Salt Flats. So that really helps me be creative. You know, gardening is a huge outlet for me too.
Right on. Excellent.
When we're home.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Well, it's been wonderful talking to you. I don't want to take too much more of your time.
No, it's great. I appreciate it. I appreciate you.
And I'm in Northern California. Hopefully you'll make it out here and I can see you live and in person.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll be doing a Pacific Northwest. We were just in Tacoma. I know that's way up, but that's not relevant to you. But we're going to be starting to get out there a little bit more often as well. So we'll be coming your way hopefully next summer.
Right on. Excellent. Well, thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you have a great day.
You too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Have Guitar, Will Travel. You can catch up on all the things I'm doing at thedeadlies.com. And I'm on all the social media platforms as well. And please support Vintage Guitar and all the wonderful things they do, because they do many, many wonderful things for us guitar players. Thanks. Please subscribe. Please tell a friend. And I'll see you guys next week. Bye, guys.